Welcome to Teaching Restored 1.0, where we get to teach all about how to teach the gospel of Jesus Christ. Now, Julie, did that make sense? 1.0.
I hear it said. Whoa, Kevin! I hear it said 1.0. Is that what you mean?
Like 1.0. That means there's going to be a Teaching Restored 2.0.
Oh, Don't say point. Which one you're saying is wrong? The one you're saying is weirding me out.
Okay, I don't know which one I said just said, but
it's a dot every time.
Version one of Teaching Restored is what we're doing now. That means there's going to be a version two of Teaching Restored coming. So I'm just 2.0. Thank you. 2.0.
No. Isn't that feel weird to you?
No.
Why does that sound so weird to me?
I don't know. I think in IT, maybe the vernacular is more 2.0, 2.0.
Oh my gosh.
Anyways. You get version. We'll do version one, version two, whatever it is, right? Okay. So that's coming up. So everyone be ready for that because that's coming up soon.
We got some announcements. It's pretty awesome.
Okay. Julie, take it away.
Okay, let's do it. Okay. So, Todd would say cheese because I just said queso. Yeah, funny, huh?
Yeah.
So, but I wanted to start. So have you ever been like wandering the halls during Sunday school? And you see youth sneaking into the bathroom, or you see even adults just like chilling, doing laps. And do you see that?
Striking up conversations and in the hallways and
staying with the conversation.
Yeah, because I would never be among those people.
Oh,
never. I would not be one of those model citizens there. No.
Okay, chatty. So when you see that, like, let's say, for example, you're making a lap, maybe you're even just going to use the restroom.
Yes.
And you see a couple of youth that you know absolutely should be in class right now and are trying to avoid eye contact with you as they walk past because they know, you know what I'm saying? What do you say to them?
To youth or adults?
Either. What do you say to somebody you find circling the hall? Like, do you say anything? Do you just let it go? You're like, I'm not my brother's keeper. Whatever.
If it's my kid, I'll say something.
Yes. Okay. For sure.
Right. If it's a youth, I'll typically say something just real casual. Just like, you guys got a teacher this time? Are you missing out on a teacher or anything? No. Okay. Well, you know, but if it's an adult, I'm like, okay, whatever. It's your thing.
Yeah. Okay, that sounds about like what I would do, right? If it's the kids, I might tease them a little bit.
Yeah.
Right? Yeah. If it's my own kid, I'm like, what are you doing out here?
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So I started thinking a little bit about this lesson that I want to talk about today. And I started thinking about why people don't go to class. So why do you think sometimes they don't go?
Okay, so many things popped in my head. Not only just wandering the halls, but like sacrament meeting, I'm out.
Yeah.
And they don't go to second hour, right?
Yeah.
And that opens up, just that right there opens up, that scenario opens up a whole bunch of other possibilities and reasons. And so.
Like, start listening.
Okay. It's boring. And I don't want to spend my time doing boring things.
Okay.
It's the person who is teaching and I don't want to listen to them anymore.
Mm-hmm. Like sometimes people be like, oh, who's teaching? Oh.
Yes. That happens all the time.
Yeah.
Okay. The topic. I heard the topic is going to be this. Yeah. I'm not going to be a part of that topic. I'm out.
Yep. Maybe an uncomfortable topic, something they don't love, something they feel like they've heard 1,000 times.
Right.
Okay.
Or that they are just completely against. They're like, yeah, I don't agree with that one. And so I don't like that point. I'm out. And when I think about the youth, it's a socialization thing. And so it could be laziness or not. And I don't want to say laziness, but, you know, in a way because I've fallen into that as well. It's like, I need to go to class, but dude over there, hey, I got to go talk to dude just because I can. Yeah. And why not?
Yeah. Kind of thing. So in other words, there are other things that are a little bit more socially appealing than right. class.
There could be.
Okay. Yeah. Okay.
Just a habit of just going to sacrament and then not going to anything else.
Yeah, so it could just be a habit.
Regular habit. Yeah. So right. that's what I'm coming up with. Those five.
Okay. Those are good. Do you think that like when you said a social thing, I started thinking about something else. I started thinking about discomfort going to class. Like, do you ever show up? I don't know. You know, you've got big wards, you've got small wards, right?
Sure.
If you're in a big ward, do you ever show up and you have a difficult time finding a seat or the only seats that are left?
That's a great point too. Yeah. Yep. Yep.
Right.
Sure.
So maybe kind of a little bit of social anxiety about mm-hmm. where you're going to sit or even who you're going to sit by, especially mm-hmm. for the youth, mm-hmm. you know, maybe there's somebody that they do or don't want to sit by in mm-hmm. class and they're a little bit like, about it. I know that my daughter was saying something to me the other day that actually surprised me a little bit. And she just talked about, she doesn't always feel comfortable in young women specifically. And part of her discomfort comes from the way that other people interact with the teachers. It bothers her. She says she feels like it's often pretty disrespectful. And so you've got these teachers who are giving a lesson and nobody's really paying attention or,
sure.
you know, they're kind of making jokes or whatever. And so there's a little bit of just like, it's really hard to get something out of it, but it also makes her really uncomfortable to have that kind of disrespect.
Right.
Right. Okay. So I started thinking a little bit about the sections that we're studying in the Doctrine and Covenants right now. And we're at a point in the church's history, if you will, where the church is barely like a year old and the persecutions are starting to rain down hard. And it's interesting because one of the things that they have a discussion about is, you know, for our safety, should we like screen people that are coming into church? Like, should we be a little bit more cautious about who we let come to our meetings? Right?
Right.
And they get this revelation from the Lord that really is focused on welcoming everybody.
Right.
And so as I was thinking about that, I actually was studying this with my kids last night and we were talking a little bit about this lesson. I want to read just a couple of verses and I want us to think about not why we or other people might be uncomfortable going to class or hesitant or lacking the desire or whatever. I want us to think about whether or not we are doing anything to make them want to come. And that's either as a teacher or as another person in there. And the opposite, are we doing anything that might make them not want to come?
Okay.
And so that, gotcha. Let's start with that. Let's start with the not. Okay. So let's open up our scriptures. Let's go to section 46 in the Doctrine and Covenants first.
Mm-hmm.
And why don't you go to that one, verse 3, and I'm going to look up 3rd Nephi, chapter 18, verse 22. So 46:3 is the first one. Hold on. Give me just a second to get it up so I can actually pay attention instead of like halfway paying attention.
Book of Mormon,
3rd Nephi. Okay. You go ahead with yours.
Nevertheless, ye are commanded never to cast anyone out from your public meetings, which are held before the ward, the world.
The ward?
The ward.
Okay, or the ward to the ward too.
That is true.
Yeah, all of it is true. Well said. Okay, so literally never cast anyone out. And I'm like, well, of course we wouldn't. Well, think for a minute about ways that we cast people out emotionally.
Yeah.
Inadvertently. Let's look at 3 Nephi 18:22. Basically says the same thing, but it just adds a tiny bit more. And it says, behold, and this is Christ talking to the people. Like he's come and he's visited the Nephites. And like, this is during that whole period of time, right? Where he's hanging out with them.
Right.
And he says, ye shall meet together oft, and ye shall not forbid any man from coming unto you when ye shall meet together, but suffer them that they may come unto you and forbid them not. So beyond just like, don't keep anyone out. Like It's saying, suffer them that they may come unto you. Like, not just don't be an obstacle, but actually be a catalyst to them mm-hmm. coming mm-hmm. is kind of what it says there. So think, I want to share just a quick story that came to mind while I was thinking about this lesson that I shared with my kids last night. And there are 1,000 examples, bad examples, unfortunately, of people who have been, who've decided not to come back to church or mm-hmm. not come to a class or a sacrament meeting because of just a side comment that someone made, right?
Correct.
And, you know, I started thinking about when we are the teacher, sometimes we get a little carried away in what we're talking about. Sometimes our own opinions do slip in once in a while. We have to be so cautious of that. Sometimes we articulate something in a way that, you know, might not land super well. And I'm not suggesting that we become paranoid about those things at all. Mm-hmm. I'm just suggesting that we be cautious and sensitive. And so this story really quickly, I have a friend who is transgender, and it's somebody that I, was in the MTC with. And at the time she was in my mission batch. And I love this person. And when this person came back from her mission, there was a lot of really difficult and confusing things that happened in their life. And support that they received from church leaders and church members was incredible. Mm. Like, especially during some of those difficult transition periods, like meaning, you know, as you're exploring your sexuality, as you're exploring your gender, there are some really difficult psychological and emotional conversations, decisions, et cetera, that you're making. And so fast forward several years, this friend of mine does transition and is now male. And he is married to a woman, and they have, I think, 4 or 5 lovely children they've adopted. And so they have this big, beautiful family, and had continued to remain active in the church for this, you know, through all of the things, through when gotcha. They made the decision to get married and had to, you know, some things changed for them in terms of their church membership, and like just continued to remain active. And what ended up happening after, like, you think about how many awesome conversations there had to be for them to have the courage, the strength, right. the desire, like so many positive, awesome interactions. Like that warms my heart, right? That's incredible. Right. And so I don't want to in any way negate all of the positive and all of the good that happened, but the eventual conversation that was really difficult is that one of their children decided to experiment with transitioning to be a female, and it was a biological male, and one day wore a dress to church. And just as they were coming in, was told that they needed to go put on some pants. And they never came back to church. Mm-hmm. And I thought, wow, like that is just, it's so hard. It's so hard to take some of these difficult, like things that we're navigating ourselves, right? Like you and I have our own journey with mm-hmm. these types of situations and relationships. We have to go on a journey to keep that relationship healthy and intact. And they, oh my gosh, like I have so much empathy for the journey that they've also been on through that entire process. And both journeys are valid, right? And our job is always to invite and to bring people in. Mm-hmm. It's never to forbid them, to push right. them out. And so I'm not in any way trying to criticize the person that made that comment. They probably, I mean, I don't know if they even know what kind of an impact it had. What I am trying to point out is that sometimes it just takes one thing. Like, why we as a teacher, we as a member would take it upon ourselves to forbid someone through our words or our actions, it's wrong. And we all do it in some way. And so this isn't an attempt to point fingers at other people that have done it. It's an attempt for us to reflect on, is there anything that I am doing that is forbidding others from coming through my words, my actions, even the way that I, my face, right? And it's true. I'm serious about this. And is there anything that I'm not doing that I should be doing to suffer them to come? Mm-hmm. To encourage them to come. So that was just kind of, that was a little bit of a long story, but it is definitely,
yeah.
Like it's kind of a big one, right?
It is. So, okay. Then here's a question. And I don't know where the line is, or is there a line? And it could be pretty much in any situation. And I'm going to throw out a devil's advocate. Because I don't know the answer to this, but at the same time, well, let me just throw this out. At what point is it a frailty of man? Because we all do this, right? And we all do something, right? We all offend someone or whatever. At what point is 100%. It a frailty of man? And we just have to kind of overlook that and say, whoops, we made a mistake, but... and maybe even recognize it, move on. But then there's the personal accountability of, oh, I got offended by that, but I need to turn around and still come to church. I still need to come mm-hmm. to class, right? At the same time. Mm-hmm. So there's both sides, but at the same time, we need to do what we can. So I don't know.
Think about our conversation the other week about circle of influence, circle of concern,
mm-hmm.
right? So the things that other people do, whether or not they react to our frailties or whether, you know what I mean? Those yeah. types of things are within our circle of concern, but not yeah. our circle of influence. What is within our circle of influence is whether or not we are the person forbidding or inviting, and whether or not we choose to react to the frailties of men, people who say stupid stuff right. to us, or we choose to continue on. That's all that we,
that's all we can,
do. Control.
Yeah.
And so rather than even entertain that conversation about where's the line, what's the boundary, we have to separate what is within our circle of influence and what is within our circle of concern. And if it lies within our circle of concern, I don't think that we need to worry about it right now. What we want to talk about is what lies directly within our circle of influence when it comes to that.
Okay.
Does that make Good. Sense?
Yep. Yep. So how do we recognize... what that might be. For example, what are we doing?
Yes, exactly. Right? What could we possibly be doing?
Right.
So let's talk about that for just a second. Like I was thinking a little bit about some of the ways that we might be less welcoming.
Okay.
And so keep in mind something. There's a verse a little bit later. It's in verse 8 of section 46, and the beginning phrase of it is, beware lest ye are deceived. Okay?
Okay.
And so one of the other things that I started thinking about is, how does Satan deceive us into justifying our own forbidding?
Hmm.
Like, how does he deceive us into that? So this, I'm not necessarily suggesting that you, I don't want to be pointing fingers at people, but like one of the things that I can see in my mind, and this is me being honest, is the judgment that when somebody walks into the chapel and they are wearing something that is not what you typically would see people wear, I notice, right?
Sure.
I notice it.
Yeah.
And so
it stands out. It's out of place.
It stands out. Yes. Yeah. And so when you notice things that are out of place, do you avoid them? Because they're uncomfortable. You don't know. You don't, oh, maybe it's not really, they came with a friend, blah, blah, blah. Or like, is that Satan saying, insecurity, pride, what is Satan deceiving us into thinking we ought to do versus the alternative, which would be, I noticed, hey, What can I do about that? Do you see what I'm saying? So
yes,
like that's just one example. What are some of the things that we do that we might almost be deceived by insecurity, fear, even pride into doing that might forbid people, so to speak? And I'm using that word in air quotes just because we're not necessarily saying you can't, but you know,
by our actions,
right? By our actions, we might be saying that. Yeah. So what are some of the things that we do?
This is a hard one. That's a hard question.
I'm going to throw out some examples because I've had time to think of it. Maybe this will get you thinking. Okay.
Okay. Please.
Saving a seat for someone else. And then somebody comes close and you're like, oh, I'm saving this.
Hmm. Sure.
Right.
That's good. Okay. Yeah. Okay. Yep.
Not smiling. Not avoiding eye contact. People come into the room, you're teaching. Right?
Mm-hmm.
And you ignore the fact that they came in.
Mm-hmm.
Like ignoring.
Right, right. Yeah, yeah. Stuff, yeah.
Okay.
I've seen that a lot.
Keep going.
I'm stumped.
Can you think of any? You're blank.
I know it happens because I've recognized it in myself and I've seen it in others when I'm like, oh. That probably could have been done a little better to be more welcoming, right? But I'm drawing a blank right now. But yeah, I've seen it. You're right.
Yeah. Oh, do you want me to keep going a little bit? Are you seeing some
please,
of the things?
Yeah, please go for it. Yeah.
Like, are these things resonating with
you? Yes. Yeah.
That what I'm saying right now.
Yeah, they all make sense, and I'm like, yep, I've seen that. Yeah. I've done that. Yep. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. So another one is like when you're the teacher and you see somebody looking for a spot and you don't do anything to help them.
Okay.
Like you can see, so I mean,
sure.
I'm thinking of like somebody's coming in and you're just like, you can see them floundering. You can see them scanning the back of the room and you just keep talking.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And so I'm thinking specifically.
And they're coming into a small relief society room and all the chairs are taken except for a few in the middle. And you're not trying to coordinate, hey, would you mind sliding over one to let them in or something, you know, like that? Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Exactly.
Where you could, or,
hey,
but
right here. Like there's a chair right here if you want to come up to the front.
Yep.
And then be like, sorry, it's a splash zone, but you'll be fine. Do you know what I mean? Like just ushering somebody in, basically. Mm-hmm. When we fail to usher somebody in, we're basically saying, stay out or figure it out or whatever. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. So each of these examples that you've mentioned, I've noticed, or I've seen a little pattern here, and this is, and whether I'm right or wrong in this, I don't know because I haven't had a lot of time to think about this, but rather than focusing, the person or the teacher or whomever is focused on more what they need to get done, or the person, you know, this is my seat. They're not focused on the person, is what I guess I'm saying. They're not focused on the people and helping them be welcome, right? It's more, I've got a lesson to teach, or I've got a friend to save for, or whatever it means. You know, I've got this content in my head that I've got to get out, and this person could figure it out themselves. They're coming in, or whatever it may be, but it's not focused on the person.
Nailed it. Okay. So my daughter, bless her. She's 14, like cut her some slack, but I want to tell you kind of what goes on in her head, not because I'm critical of it, but because it illustrates to me something that is in all of us that she will emotionally graduate out of as she matures. Right.
Sure.
But we still like, when we're feeling insecure, we almost default back to this in ourselves. Mm. So when she goes to church, she's worried about who she's going to see, what of her friends are going to be there, what the activity is and whether or not it will be of interest to her, you know, whether or not it's comfortable for her to do whatever sport they're doing, whether or not she feels proficient. Like it is all focused on her and her own comfort and her own, you know, whatever that she's going into. And so we've really tried to have this discussion about what are the reasons that you go to these activities? And I've even said to her sometimes, can you just go to be supportive? I know you don't want to do this activity.
We've said that to our kids as well. Yeah. Who right? can you go like, there I mean, to help someone else?
Exactly. Is there anybody, like, is there somebody that you could reach out to? If you feel uncomfortable, it's likely that somebody else does. Da, 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 da. So we have these conversations mm-hmm. with our kids, but do we have these conversations with ourselves?
No.
Like, do we go in? No, never, right? We don't. And like, I have been that person who's gone and I've seen somebody put their books beside them on the chair next to them or their purse in Relief Society or whatever. And I pass that chair because of the fact that I don't think that they want me in that chair. And so like, I had this experience in the temple one day where I'm like, do I leave a gap? Do I not? Do I sit next to them? Do I leave a chair?
Right,
you
right,
know, that
right.
moment.
Yes.
And as I was coming in, the woman pushed the seat down and said, right here, right here. She didn't know me. And she invited me to sit on her saddlebags, basically neat. Come right up and sit next to her. And she was like, I want you here. And that I was like, oh, thank you. We're best friends. Like it really said something to me, you know, where I was having this little, do I squish or do I not? Does she need space? Does she not? Moment. And so part of what we do, even by how we position ourselves, and if the person who's put the book there doesn't make eye contact with you and say, I'm so sorry, I'm saving it, but please sit on the next one, then you assume they don't want me.
Right.
And you walk past it. Right?
Right. Right. Yeah.
And so are there things that we even allow to happen? Like, so we're going to talk in a minute. And so maybe I'm giving you more than 2 seconds of time to think about this.
Okay.
We're going to talk a minute about things that we can do that suffer them to come, meaning that are proactively inviting people to feel more comfortable, more welcome, and more wanted. Okay. So we're going to talk about that in just a minute. I want to dig into this point just a little bit more. Hold on 1 second. I got to find my scripture.
So while you say that, this reminds me of when I do, when I speak publicly in front of a, not as of a large group, but let's say a smaller group, and someone walks in late, I'll stop right there and I'll say, hey, glad you're here. Just to let you know, the people who come in last do karaoke first. So you're going to be up, just to let you know.
Awesome.
And that always breaks it up. Yes. Like, oh, okay. Yeah. Right. Right.
Yes.
Yeah. But I, yeah.
And I know some people don't like attention drawn to them.
Right. Right.
Right.
That's true.
But you're almost not drawing attention to that person by making a joke that right. everyone is involved in.
Yeah.
Like it doesn't.
Because they feel uncomfortable enough coming in late.
Right.
Right. And it's like, yeah, yeah. Oh, sorry. And then just make a joke of it. Yeah.
Yeah. But if I walk in late and somebody's like, hey, and even if the teacher, like I've done this before, I've caught myself doing this before, I'll just make eyebrows at the person.
Be yeah, like, right.
Even like I'm
give
talking.
Give them a wink like, and hey. Yeah.
Yeah. Give them a wink or I'll be like right here, yeah. pointing to a chair for them to come and sit in. Anything little, it's an acknowledgement of the person. Mm-hmm. And in a way, when we don't do that, we are kind of forbidding them in a way.
Yeah.
Like, I don't want to say that you're doing the opposite, but are you a little bit? This is going to sound like I'm making it negative and I'm not intending to do that. But if we can say, if we can justify in our own minds, not paying attention to that person, is that Heavenly Father helping us? Because I think that the Spirit would help us to figure out a way to make that person feel loved. And I'm not saying it's like draw attention to them, but I'm saying it's an acknowledgement, even a silent one, even a nonverbal one of glad you're here.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like I've even said, oh my gosh, I'm so happy you're here. I love seeing you. Like, and I genuinely feel that when certain people walk in, actually with most people, like I get excited to see the people that I've come to love when they come. So I'm not going to like pretend I'm not excited. Let it out.
Right. Right. Okay. Flip that a little bit.
Okay.
And now you have someone coming in, maybe not late, but who is not, for example, going back to your other example, wearing what you would typically think of as normal, and they may be uncomfortable coming in. And a lot of times we'll just ignore that and say, okay, and or whether they're coming into the class, or we'll just ignore that completely. And whether it's where, you know, it could be a lot of different issues. It's not just wearing something that we don't expect, right? Or something. I remember back in the day, back in the 80s, when dyeing hair started to become popular, right? And it was bleaching. It was bleaching a hair. And one of the young men came in who had dark hair, and he had bleached part of his hair. Right. And what was the talk about that? And it was, oh my goodness, is the bishop going to let him pass the sacrament? There was a whole bunch of talk around that, right? Because it was the first thing of, that's not normal. Can we? And I wonder if I had been an adult, if I had gone up and would I have ignored it? Would I have said something about it and acknowledged and just said, hey, oh, looks like that. Yep. Okay, cool. Or move on, or what, you know, what I don't know. But it's, you know, by ignoring it. And I've seen myself do that sometimes when something is abnormal and I'll ignore it. Does that send a signal that I don't care? Or
like that you're avoiding it?
Yeah, that I'm avoiding it. Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. I think that's a really good question. And here's my thought is this requires some EQ, right? Some emotional intelligence, because there are times when a person does not want attention drawn to them and you can sense it. And there are times when they did it for attention. So give them what they want.
Right.
Or do you see what I'm saying? And so part of what I think we have to do is read people's body language a little bit, pay attention to their personalities, get to know them. I remember, and we are in the late 20 or mid 2020s right now, right?
Yes.
But a class that I was teaching with seniors a while ago, one of the kids came in and he totally dyed his hair like it was black. And so I'm like, dude, when did you dye your hair? Like, let's talk about it. Like, let's have a conversation about it. And everybody got on board. He's like, I did it. And he just wanted to talk about it. And it broke the ice in class. And it was a great thing for us to start our discussion with, you know? So you kind of have to be able to read that a little bit. And, you know, somebody who does come in, for example, wearing, you know, really casual clothes, well, if you ignore them because they're wearing casual clothes and you're like, oh, I don't want to draw attention to them. I don't want to make them uncomfortable. I don't want them to feel highlighted. Then they feel like, oh, well,
I'm not, maybe
I don't fit in. I'm not make them feel wanted. Right. You don't have to point out that they're wearing casual clothes to church. You just have to be like, hey, I'm so glad you're here. What if that's a person coming to our church for the first time? And what people remember is how they feel. And so we've got to be making a conscious effort, even if it makes us uncomfortable, to tell people that they're wanted. Like, I'm so happy you came today. What's your name? You know, awesome. Thanks. There's a seat over here for you if you want. You know, we're talking about da 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 da. You know, just help people, invite people into the conversation. Even if you don't make a big deal out of it, you could just walk over to them and say, hey, super glad you're here. So-and-so, will you help them find the verse that we're on? And just wrap them into the conversation somehow. If you think that it will make them uncomfortable to call them out publicly, privately walk over to wherever they are and say, hey, now let's wrap you in. Pull the people on either side of them to help loop them into the discussion. Do you see what I'm saying? It's these little things that we can do.
So what I hear you say is that we need to be a master inviter. That's kind of what I'm taking out of it.
Yes, I love that. I love that.
And there is a master inviter himself that we can emulate, but we can master the art of inviting. So
yes. So let's read a verse. Okay.
Let's read.
3 Nephi 18. Let's keep going. And we read 22, let's read 23 through 25. And what are some ways that we can welcome and invite according to the master inviter? He says, hold up your light that it may shine unto the world. Behold, I am the light of the world, behold, I am the light which ye shall hold up. Mm-hmm. That which ye have seen me do. Behold, ye see that I have prayed unto the Father, and ye all have witnessed. Oh, wait, I skipped a verse. Back up. Now that was 24, go to 23. But ye shall pray for them and shall not cast them out. And if it so be that they come unto ye oft, ye shall pray for them unto the Father in my name. Mm-hmm. And then skip down now to 25. Ye see that I have commanded that none of you should go away, but rather have commanded that ye should come unto me, that you might feel and see. Okay, I'm going to come back to that. Even so shall ye do unto the world. Okay, and whosoever breaketh this commandment suffereth himself to be led into temptation. So there's a ton to dissect. Let me just, in the interest of time, go through a few thoughts that I had initially on this verse. Mm-hmm. So the first one in 25, commanded that ye should come unto me, and specifically think about what just happened in chapter 11 of 3 Nephi, that ye might feel and see. He wanted everyone to have an experience with him,
right,
individually. And so it's saying, even so shall ye do unto the world. So we have the obligation, the command, the charge to help each person come, feel, and see. Meaning, have an experience with Jesus Christ.
Right.
Right? And if we can be the instrument to them having that experience, if we can be the catalyst to them having that experience, if we can be the person that invites them, even by getting rid of the frowny face and changing it to a smile and making the world a better place by smiling all the while, if we can do that, that is shining the light of Jesus Christ and giving it to somebody else. Like, it is the little things.
So what frame of reference? So that, as you're saying this, my thought around the frame of reference with which I might approach someone, as Jesus commanded there, to invite all to come unto him, to have an experience, right?
Yes.
If we take someone who may seem out of place or nervous or whatever coming, and if our thought is, I want to help them have an experience with Christ, then what would we do? What would we say? How would we think? You know, all that. Yes. But if we don't have that, it's easy to slip into the examples that you gave before of ignoring, of focusing on other things, of, you know, making a comment that might not be quite appropriate to, but, and may offend. But if our thought was, I want them to have an experience to come closer to Christ, what can I do to facilitate that, to invite them to partake in that experience? Then our actions will be completely different.
Right. Like, even as you're describing that, I actually have a picture in my mind of the body language of somebody doing that versus the body language of someone.
Yes, I did too, oddly enough. Yeah.
Right? Uh-huh. Like, you almost, I don't know if you played a scene, but I played a scene, and what it was like that hen gathereth her chickens type of a thing. Like, my wing's open. Come on in. You know, kind of that visual of the body language of someone who is inviting someone to come and have an experience with Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
And you know what's so interesting about this, Kev? If you look at the last sentence of that verse, look at what it says. This is so interesting to me. Oh, darn. Face ID versus typing in my code. Okay, there we go. Whosoever breaketh this commandment, so he's calling it a commandment, that we don't forbid, but rather we invite people to have an experience. And he says, if we breaketh this commandment, suffereth himself to be led into temptation. And so, taking it back to that point I was making a little bit earlier about what are some of the ways that Satan tempts us or deceives us into forbidding, right? Mm-hmm. And I thought a little bit about, if we give into the temptation to have a grumpy face, to block ourselves with our body language, like to create barriers, to ignore people, to, like, because every one of us, especially on a bad hair day or a highly emotional morning or whatever, we are tempted to hole up. Like, we just got to hole up and get our way through church. I've had those weeks where I'm like, if anybody talks to me, I'm going to cry. So I got to avoid everyone. And so if you're having that day, man, I sure hope someone finds you and invites you that day. And the best remedy for that type of day is to look up and to smile and to think about other people and to try and. So I'm not suggesting you're not entitled to have those days, and please let someone rescue you when you do.
Right.
And there is a temptation to hole up sometimes that we can overcome. And we overcome that temptation by literally doing the opposite, by expanding our wings, by reaching out.
I think that
inviting people to
us. Yeah, I think that displays a lot of intentionality. We can't, if we don't have the strength to do that someday, some Sunday or some any other day of the week, if we don't have the emotional, spiritual strength at that time, okay. You know, we're gonna do what we can. But if we do, sometimes we're not intentional enough and we just float along and we don't think about it. We actually have to be purposeful in saying, what is my purpose today? What am I going to do today? How am I going to do it before we go into the situation and just let the situation, let us kind of react this to the situation rather than going in and acting upon it. So, I like that.
Well said. I have this final thought that I want to share with you. I want to frame it though really quickly. I have it written down here. It's from an LDS Living article. And part of what it goes back to is what I said at the very, very beginning about how sometimes insecurity stops us from going to class, right? And so we as the teacher, what we're trying to do is help people know, not just thinking it, but help them to know that they are wanted, right? That's part of it. Part of it that also stops us, like one of the temptations that we enter into is that we start looking at other people and making judgments of them that, you know, maybe they shouldn't be here. Maybe they make it uncomfortable for everybody else because of some of the comments that they make in class. Or maybe they, you know, I wish they wouldn't show up because they always cast a negative net over everything that we're discussing. Or they always bring up controversy, or they always, you know, whatever. And we have temptation, if you will, to, in a way, just because we're frustrated with them or we're feeling maybe a little bit like better than them or, you know, critical of them or even insecure because they're smarter than we are. And so we wish they wouldn't show up because then we don't feel as dumb, you know, whatever the case may be. If ever we are tempted to forbid in any way, I just love what this little article talks about who should come to church. Okay. You ready to read it? Do you want to say anything before I read it?
No, that's great. I want to hear this.
It says, church isn't just a general hospital. It's an emergency room, a rehab facility, a cancer center, and a specialty clinic for every imaginable spiritual ailment. Jesus Christ isn't just a healer. He's the only master healer. He knows every single diagnosis and every possible prescription. Do you have a drug problem? Come to church. You struggling with pornography? Come to church. Battling inappropriate thoughts? Come to church. Do you sometimes slip and take the Lord's name in vain? Bring that habit on Sunday and ask for help to leave it behind. Struggle with telling the truth? Gather with your fellow sinners and immerse yourself in the greatest truth ever told. Finally, for those of us already on the pews each week, may we remember that our job isn't to take roll and wonder why so-and-so brought the neighborhood gossiper or why such-and-such invited his friend who always smells like whiskey. Our only responsibility is to love each and every one who summons the courage to walk through the church doors. If we find this challenging, if we wonder why we're surrounded by so many sinners, we might remember that no matter how well we think we're doing, every morning when we look in the mirror, we find a sinner there too. So are you a sinner? Awesome. So am I. Come join us on Sunday and we'll save you a seat.
That's great.
Isn't that awesome?
That is pretty great. I do like that.
I loved it.
Who was that? Who wrote that?
It was an LDS Living article. I've got the link to it somewhere, but I don't have it on the paper in front of me. I'll have to find it. I'll have to look it up.
I like that. Thank you. So from studying this, from preparing this, what is the one key takeaway that you would want someone to walk away with and act on?
I would want people to, as teachers or as participants, whether you're teaching or whether you are just listening, I want us to open our eyes. I want us to be inviters. Like Matt, what did you say earlier about inviting people? You said something
the
like
master inviter,
master inviters, or something like that.
Master inviters.
What was that voice?
I don't know. That was weird.
You just did like a robot voice. Did you know you did that? Did you do it?
I accidentally hit a button.
That makes me sound a little.
Oh my gosh! It was perfect.
Okay. Thank you.
That is awful. Okay.
Button.
I want us all to be better inviters. Like I want us to be so consciously bringing people in, helping them to feel wanted in whatever way is natural to you. Everybody can do this in a way that's natural to them, but let's be conscious and intentional about looking around, not looking down, and about helping everyone to feel like they are wanted in this space.
I love that. So good. Thank you. I think I need to listen to this again and really get that in, because sometimes when I am, we've talked about in the past about when I go to the temple, I feel like I'm temple me.
Yeah. Temple,
right?
Kevin.
Temple Kevin, right? Temple Kevin. Mm-hmm. And when I go to the temple and I'm Temple Kevin, a lot of the things that you said, this is what we need to try to be like. I feel like I'm that person. And then I go away from the temple, and then I feel like I'm that other guy. And I feel very disjointed all over the place, right? And I want to be more Temple Kevin, if that makes sense.
I love it.
And
yeah, so Temple Kevin at church, man.
There you go.
Right?
Yes, at church.
You're going to develop a church Kevin too.
Church Kevin. Okay, that's my next goal, is to make a church Kevin.
You can do it.
I'm going to try. Thank you, Julie. I appreciate it. If you would, love, share, subscribe. Maybe, you know what? We should say, hey, people, forget love, like. Let's make a love button. Love button.
I know. Love it.
Thanks, Julie.
Thanks, Kevin.
Enjoy.
See ya.